I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Anne Hillerman. She's a writer. She's co-founder of Word Harvest Workshops. She's a restaurant reviewer for the Albuquerque Journal and the Journal North. And Deborah Madison joins us. She's a chef, teacher, author of many cookbooks, now gardener, and lover of food and all things food related. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you. A pleasure to be here.
It's nice to have you both back on the air. So you are running all these workshops, Anne Hillerman, and you, Deborah, are actually teaching a writing workshop called Writing Your Life Through the Lens of Food.
Yes.
I think that's such an intriguing idea. What does that mean?
Well, I can give you some personal background. Patrick and I lived in Ireland for a few years ago, and I was stuck in a house with nothing to do, so I decided to write a memoir. And it turned out to really be looking at everything through food, since that's what my life has been centered around professionally, but also emotionally, and I think in other ways too. And it was very revealing to me about myself, and not necessarily in a way that made me feel terrific, you know, but then it became something to work on that I've worked with the last 5 years. And I think people have different things that are central to their lives, but we're all involved with food one way or another. And there are always issues around it, struggles around it, joys around it, all kinds of things. So it just seems like a good place to start from if you want to try writing something of a memoir or about your life.
What were some of the revelations that you had about yourself when starting to write about your life in terms of food?
Well, one of them was, is why didn't I go to graduate school instead? That came up. I thought,
what do you mean?
Well, I don't know. It was just like, I often wish I had done more in the way of formal study that wasn't food related. But I mean, I found my own reasons for being attracted to food and that I hadn't noticed. And for example, my parents were diametrically opposite each other in their approach to food. So, you know, under the eye of one, the glass was always half empty and we were hungry. Under the eye of the other, there's plenty to go around and not to worry. And so I got caught in this struggle. And I think that that really explained a lot to me why it was so important. And, you know, things I did that expressed my response to one parent or the other.
Were they also diametrically opposed in the sense of, oh, let's have hot dogs again versus let's have something really fancy and fabulous?
Yeah, my mother was a horrible cook and skimpy. There was, you know, everything was about, she spent the food money, her food budget, to make sure we had music lessons, you know, as kids, and dance lessons and art lessons. And so we're always hungry, you know. Whereas my father, you know, he wasn't, when my mother would go away, he'd take her to the airport. He'd come home with shopping bags full of pot roasts and steaks and all this, you know, kind of Midwest comfort food. And it would always be in the middle of summer and 110 degrees outside. And we'd be eating, you know, pot roasts and pie.
Oh, my goodness. And you became a chef with that background. That's so interesting. I mean, do you think that that kind of food attitudes and weird attitudes pushed you in that direction?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It did. Because the first time I had food that was really good, when I was 16 and my parents had gone to Europe on sabbatical and I was farmed out to this family who didn't have four kids, who had two incomes and who were gourmets and had lived in France forever, suddenly I had my first good food and it was like this revelation. I didn't know it was supposed to be good. You know,
so that's so interesting. I was wondering something. When I was about 15 or 16, I started to appreciate good food of the kind you're talking about for the first time. And up until then, I was just eating M&Ms and hamburgers and sometimes put the M&Ms on the hamburgers. just ate Dr. Pepper and junk. Just ate junk. And the, you know, not junky fare that my mother and father fed to me. I mean, it wasn't that they gave me all those things, but given. And then something completely changed. And I wondered if, and I wonder today, maybe you can say something about this, whether the palate matures at a certain point in your teenage, just the way the rest of your body is maturing.
I don't know. I think there are probably different things that go on, and that's what somebody would discover in writing about their life in terms of food. I don't know that it's really a palate maturity, but it may be another kind of maturity, or certain questions are solved and answered for you that you don't have to, you know, you don't have to put M&Ms on your hamburgers anymore, which would be a kind of maturity, I suppose. But, you know, certain patterns, I think, stay with us for quite a long time before we're willing to give them up. And it's interesting to see what those are.
It's such an interesting approach, and maybe it's been done before, but I've never heard of it. The idea of, because everybody on some level, or a lot of people are kind of interested in themselves and their own stories, but
sure,
that particular lens is something I've never thought of before, I've never seen before.
Well, I've given this class a number of times in other places, and it's always so interesting what people come up with, and it's so different from my own. But I also want to talk about, in this class, certain craft aspects. Like, I think there are a lot of people around who maybe are at a point in their life where they would like to write a collection of recipes for their children or their family or for someone who's getting married. And, you know, how do you write a recipe and make it work so that it reads and is actually effective? There are little things that one learns to do. And there's the matter of the head notes, which are what introduces the recipe, which is where the real creative part of doing a cookbook or a recipe book comes to play, and it's a lot of fun. And
yeah,
you know, and I have a bunch of head notes I read to people so they can see all these different ways in which
what kind of things do you write in your head notes?
Well, I mean, that's the place where you have to seduce your reader. This is wonderful. This is easy. This will feed 10 and you won't even know you've cooked, you know, or whatever it is. But, or it can be something very, very different, something very literary, something historical. It doesn't have to be personal. I mean, there's certain cliches that are so endlessly tiresome, like, this is quick and easy, and although it looks like a lot of ingredients, it's really fast. You know, it's like, please, let's not say anything like this. But it's a great opportunity to build the context of a recipe so that it's not just floating out there. I mean,
right,
we don't need recipes floating. There's a million of them. We need them to be anchored to your own experience. And so we'll get a little practice doing that.
So, Deborah, could you say this was a recipe that my grandmother fixed and I remember eating it at her summer house in Maine? Would that be appropriate,
sure,
for a head note?
Absolutely. Or I remember eating an omelet in Mexico City when I was homesick, and it was so disappointing because it was cooked in oil, not butter.
Right.
Like my grandmother's
right,
omelets.
Right,
and
right,
that
yeah,
made all the difference in the world. And then yeah, you can say something about fat, in fact, is a really important determinant of flavor and taste and culture and where you're from and who you are. You know,
yeah,
it just really is.
It's interesting that now that there's so many internet recipes, like if you go onto Epicurious and look at a recipe, not only are there the head notes of whoever wrote the recipe, but then hundreds or at least dozens of people have made the recipe and commented on it. And that's interesting, too.
Yeah. My favorite yeah, comments are, I didn't make it the way you said, and I didn't think it was a very good recipe.
I know, or you read them and they've changed just about every ingredient.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. They say, well, I like this, but I didn't have any butter, so I used olive oil.
Right.
I didn't have any pecans, so I used walnuts.
Right.
Yeah.
I didn't have any raisins, so I used turnips.
And actually, a lot of times they don't have head notes. They're just floating there in space.
Right.
You know, and I think, why would I want to turn my energy to this recipe without somebody telling me something about why it moved them?
Right.
Right.
And that can be so many different things that can have played a particular role in their life, or it represents an adventure or a personal history, or, you know.
And it's all a way of cultivating awareness, memory, attention to detail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Very interesting. We're talking to Deborah Madison and Ann Hillerman. Now, Deborah, you will be teaching this class on the 14th of July, and there's a lot of other classes. They're just, what are they, one-day workshops?
That's right. Yeah, they're from 9 to 4. We're doing them this year at La Tienda out in El Dorado, which is a really nice space. There's a couple restaurants out there. People can walk around. You know, we can go outside. They've been really sweet people to work with. Besides Deborah's, let me go back a little bit. We're doing some workshops on the craft of writing and some workshops on the business of writing. And Deborah's kind of falls in between because she's going to talk a little bit about both of those.
Uh-huh.
We're ending the season with a writer named Cindy Bellinger, who has started her own publishing company. And she's going to talk to people about how to publish your own book.
Which is a huge thing now.
Yeah.
For two reasons. One, everybody thinks they can write and they've got a computer and they can do self-publishing. And the publishing industry is in such terrible shape.
Right, right. We were really happy to have Cindy working with us. She has also served on the board of New Mexico Book Association. So she knows a lot about the publishing business. And she originally was going to self-publish, and that was why she started this little publishing company. So she's going to be happy to share what she's learned about not only publishing, but also the promotion and distribution, the whole nine yards of that.
That sounds very useful.
Very useful and interesting. And, I mean, I think that's the key. You can self-publish your own book very cheaply, but who's going to read it? And how are you going to get it in their hands?
That's right.
Yeah.
Or in their devices.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, not everybody is as lucky as Deborah, where you have a name where there's already so much credibility behind it.
Right.
And then we're having a couple workshops that are going to be focused mostly on the craft of writing, a workshop on how to develop good characters, and a workshop on how to find the story that's really right for you to tell.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I think it's a really nice combination of sort of the nuts and bolts and the more kind of creative, free-flowing stuff.
How do you find the story that is the one you want to tell? And how do you know whether that's fiction or nonfiction?
That's a good question. And I don't know, but I'm Kate Horsley, who's a writer from Albuquerque. She's published 6 books, and that's what she's going to be talking about. And her books, some of her novels have a real strong memoir component, and some are historical novels. So I'm looking forward to hearing what she has to say about that.
Very interesting.
I took one of the classes from James McGrath, and it was wonderful. It was such a lovely day to have a whole day and well-paced to be able to write and to read out loud, which is another important part of writing, is reading out loud.
Right.
Yeah.
I think these days there are so many online seminars, and I think they certainly have their purpose, but there's nothing quite like taking a day just for yourself, away from the office, away from the phone, away from the computer, and being with other people who share your passion for good writing. And not only interacting with the instructor, as people will have a chance to do with Deborah, but interacting to the other people who've kind of self-selected to spend the day that way. So to me, it seems it's almost like a mini retreat.
You know, I was talking to somebody the other day about a project, and he said, well, we don't have to meet. We can do it online. And I was like, but it's nice to meet. And
yes.
And he said, that's so Santa Fe.
I think it's so human.
I think it's so human, too.
Yeah, that's what we thought. We thought, sure, we could do these classes online, but isn't it fun to just spend a day with people?
Yeah, and if you think about the material that you are eventually going to be working with as an author, it's not going to be what you learned online.
Right.
It's going to be the interactions you actually had in something that we might call the real world.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. And being with people. I mean, when you're writing about people. Even if it's you writing a memoir, you're still writing about people. You're putting yourself in a context of others. And so we're kind of losing the knack of that, I think, in a lot of ways. So it was wonderful to go to a seminar and have a day.
And I think so much of writing is solitary, too. But it's great to have a chance to be with people who kind of understand what that's like. And who can, I mean, if you seem distracted about something, you know, they'll understand that, she's still back in the book that she left on her computer.
Now, Deborah, you were a chef, and then you started writing cookbooks. Was that a transition for you? I would think that being a professional chef, there's a lot of that which is visual and sensuous and nonverbal, and then putting that on a page.
That's
a whole new craft that you're having to learn.
Yeah, it was. And you know, the first book I wrote, I had already left greens. I'd left the restaurant, and then I was asked to come back from Italy, where I was living, and write this book. And I didn't have a clue what I was doing or how to make a recipe or anything. But I got through it. And at the end, I realized I like doing this. You know, I want to try it again, but I want it to be a more personal book, not this restaurant, you know, image. And I like doing that, too. Now I'd like to get away from putting everything in terms of a recipe and be able to. In fact, I am doing it in this book that I'm writing, but it's very hard. People, publishers, they don't want you to stray too much from what you're known for.
Right.
It's very frustrating.
Which really inhibits creativity.
Yeah, it does.
What are you working on now?
It's a book called Vegetable Literacy, 10 Plant Families in Your Kitchen. So it's looking, it does have recipes, but it's really looking at 10 major plant families that provide a lot of the common foods that we cook and how the foods in families relate to one another as a way of, I think if you're a cook and you understand that everything in the Asteraceae family tends to be bitter and difficult and argue with wine, but they're all incredibly potent plants, you know, like artichokes and radicchio and lettuce and cardoons. And
those are all related?
Yeah, they're all related.
And they all argue with wine?
Well, they're difficult plants.
It sounds like somebody's family.
Yeah, well, it's a family, you know. But then you begin to say, oh, okay, well, gosh, I've got radicchio and I've got one artichoke. Maybe it makes sense to put them together. And guess what? It does.
So the things, you know, in the family tend to go well to each other.
Yeah.
With each other.
The mustard family, for example, has all the cabbages in it and mustard. And mustard happens to be a good condiment in one form or another with almost every member of that family.
Oh, interesting.
And they all have the same kinds of flowers and morphology.
Oh, you were coming on the air when that comes out. This is very interesting and important.
Yeah.
You would think they probably all have similar nutritional...
They do.
Yeah.
I mean, everything in the Allium family tends to have a lot of sulfur qualities, you know, in it, which are very beneficial. And in another family is something else. Again, in the Daisy family is inulin, which is a kind of sugar that's very slow to break down. You know, yeah, they do have their characteristics.
This is very interesting. Okay, when does this come out?
About a year from now.
Oh, okay, well, we'll see you in a year to talk about that again. Anne Hillerman, so you've been doing these workshops as well as your writing career for quite a long time.
Yeah, this is our 10th anniversary.
Oh, nice.
The 10th anniversary of Word Harvest. My business partner and I, Jean Schomburg, started it all that time ago. And we first started with one-day workshops, which is what we're doing now. And then after a couple years, we added the Tony Hillerman Writers Conference.
That's right.
Yeah, so that's coming up in November.
Being your father.
Right. Yeah, we wanted to honor him while he was still alive. So,
yeah.
I mean, so many people were so influenced by his work. And so often people don't say that until after somebody is gone.
Yeah. I know.
So we thought it would be nice to, you know, to start the workshop while he... And also, he always enjoyed having an audience. So it worked out well on a lot of different levels.
Excellent.
I think writers do like having an audience because you do spend so much time by yourself. And I spend a lot of time trying to imagine, who is my audience? What do they want to know? What do I need to tell them? Or what's going to be excessive baggage? And, you know, and that also, of course, relates to this craft of writing a recipe. Thinking of who your audience is a very big part of it.
Now, Anne, having taught and organized these workshops for 10 years, do you have any alumni who started out beginners or whatever and then have done some successful writing?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I can't really take all the credit for it, of course, although I'd like to. We do a short story contest, and when we first started it, our first winner was a gentleman who was teaching journalism at the University of New Mexico, and I noticed he just has a second book out sort of about the history of media in the United States. University of New Mexico Press has published that. And our second winner was a mystery writer named Craig Johnson, and he's just had characters made into a movie for A&E. And he's on the New York Times bestseller list now.
Excellent.
And then we've had a lot of people who've had I don't want to say lesser success, but they haven't been noticed as much. But for them, it was success to take the book they had always wanted to write and actually hold it in their hand and be able to give it to their family. As Deborah was saying about recipes, there's a tremendous value in just in doing something so your family will have it, as well as doing things that are more commercial successes.
Exactly.
Yeah. I have a folder full of recipes that are written by hand from various family members or friends, people that have sent me, and every once in a while I take it out and look at it, and it has such vibrancy that nothing else does, you know. Yeah. Now that's we're talking about literally by hand, but also the personal connection that my grandmother shared this or my friend in Flagstaff shared this recipe is nice. And I mean, we used to have recipe boxes, you know, filled with that kind
index
of thing.
Index cards.
So, you know, there might be people out there, I suspect there are, who want to do something like that for their own families.
Sure. And there are a lot of people who don't really know how to get started. I mean, they've had these ideas, but they're not writers. So I think that's one real value that our workshops have. They kind of can move people from the idea stage to actually putting words on paper or on the computer. Let them see themselves as writers as well as people with a lot of knowledge and a mm-hmm. lot of memories.
Yeah. And the craft is just crucially important for that. Writing that is full of potential but is so poorly crafted that it makes you cringe, it's never going to go anywhere.
Right, that's right.
Word Harvest Writers Workshops are happening all this summer, and for more information you can go to wordharvest.com. You can write to wordharvest@wordharvest.com, and you can also call 505-471-1565. Ann Hillerman is the co-founder of Word Harvest Workshops, and she's a restaurant reviewer for the Albuquerque Journal, and Deborah Madison, chef, teacher, gardener, author of many cookbooks and books on food. And once again, Deborah's class is happening on the 14th of July. It's called Writing Your Life Through the Lens of Food. Thank you, ladies, for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.